perfectly how we have arrived here, because now I want to talk about Tim's habit of getting kicked out of clubs or festivals. So, Tim, what happened that night? Like, why did you get
which
kicked
night?
Out of the club?
Oh, the club.
Which night?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first episode of The Common Room, probably the number one unscripted podcast in Leeuwarden. That felt very scripted.
That's part of the joke.
It is. How are you guys doing today, boys?
Well, I would say today we started the day beautifully. There's a nice sun outside, and I'm really excited to start, and I can't wait.
Exactly. There is sun outside, beautiful weather, sitting here with my boys about to talk about some very random but interesting things. So I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, it feels a bit awkward to record what we're saying, but can't wait.
Okay. Well, today we're going to be discussing our culture shock since coming to the Netherlands and comparing it to other places where we've lived before. Because we're obviously a very international set of young men.
An international set of young men. Is that what we are?
It is what we are. So, Luca, why don't you give it a start?
What should I start with? I don't know, seriously. Should I start with fun facts or with like the...
Oh, yeah, we need to introduce ourselves.
Oh, no, bro.
We need to introduce ourselves because obviously some of the members of our audience, our vast audience...
We had the first book.
Don't know who we are. Yeah.
We should have a counter.
Thank you, Luca. With a counter for what?
Porcodillo.
Ah, Porcodillo, okay. So, let's just do like a clockwise little thing. Luca, you can start. You'll introduce me. Then I'll introduce Finn, etc.
Okay, perfect. Then Vasco is the, I would say, the brain of the old podcast. He gave us the input of doing so, and we followed him very with excitement, I would say. But I would say that Vasco is a guy that is really intrapendent, so he wants to do stuff, and really drag us in this experience. And the fun facts, I always makes fun of his cooking, and he's always bothering me about cooking carbonara, but I will never trust him, probably. So, guys, don't trust Vasco whenever he's talking about cooking Italian food, especially, because it's not a good thing to do.
I'm slightly hurt by that introduction, but I'll move on to introduce Finn. So, here's Finn Jetzes, our fellow German, who's supposed to be on time as a German, but he's always late, unfortunately. That's what we've known him for the past few days. But, you know, he's a multifaceted person, so he has a lot of other good qualities, such as he's a great dancer. I remember we danced once at a party, and that was probably like the best ballroom dancing I've ever done. I was spun around a lot, but I enjoyed it. He also has a British accent that I think that was the most like striking thing that I found out about you, was that you had a very strong British accent for someone who's never lived in the UK and just went to German school. And your English is really amazing for someone who went to German school for your whole life. And you're just exceedingly smart as well. I think that's how I would introduce Finn.
Now I'm on it. That took a positive turn towards the end after the nab about being late. But, you know, I concede that. Fair enough. Well, introducing Timothée Kopcsa. What can I say, really? It's like the most humble, gentlest person you could ever meet till he squares up against someone in the club and gets thrown out, that is. No, it's an overall great guy. You'll hear that throughout the podcast, and most of you probably already know that anyway. And yeah, probably the most fashionable person in the entirety of Kanaalstraat.
Wow. Thank you so much. Well, last but not least, we have Luca Morabito. As you might have noticed, Luca is Italian, and he's very passionate about Italian food and also generally about football. So when his favorite club, Torino, is playing, you will hear him from kilometers away. And he's an amazing cook. As I said, he's passionate about cooking. He's also a very honest and funny guy. He'll always tell you what he thinks, which I think is a great quality. And quite a funny fact about him is that he has great memory, also about very concrete things. For example, he can tell you all the World Cup winners since like 60 years in the past or even 70 years in the past. And you can call him out on that and he'll prove you right that he knows it. And I think it's really cool. Very cool party trick as well.
Well, that was a rather wholesome introduction. So, Luca, now we'll swiftly move on into our culture shock. So, why don't you give it a start?
Yeah, I mean, since I came personally to the Netherlands, my first cultural shock was when I was about to get the train and I could see that people were lining up to get inside the train. But in Italy, this thing doesn't happen. So, I just like didn't wait for people to come out of the train and just immediately rushed in order to get the plates, the seats, because I knew there was not much. And I realized that everyone was watching me like I was some sort of barbaric person or entity. So this experience taught me that from now on, I will wait for people to come out of the train and get in line. But I believe that it was a cultural shock that helped me in understanding better the Dutch habits on these topics. And I really feel it's the best way to learn a different culture from yours, like by experiencing it and realizing that you did something wrong.
Yeah, as some of you might know, I've lived in China and I had a completely different experience in terms of public transport, because there, it's just sort of like everyone for themselves. You go in, you don't wait for anyone to come out, really. And you have to be lucky to make it in, especially at peak hour, because there's a shitload of people on the train. It's not as bad as Japan. Obviously, I don't know if you guys have ever seen those videos or the pictures of like police officers literally shoving people into trains. I've never personally experienced that, but it's, you know, it's pretty tight. In the trains there. Okay, then I'll take something. One of the biggest culture shocks that I've had since I came to the Netherlands was the abundance of protesting that they have here. Because coming from China, protesting is basically non-existent there. Like, obviously, freedom of speech is limited and protesting is just illegal, or it just doesn't happen. People don't see it as a method of expression. And when it happens online, for example, like if the internet is monitored and if there are things that don't align with the government's views, they're banned online, they're taken off the internet. So obviously, if you go and do that in person, if you're having something which doesn't align with the CCP's views, then it'll instantly get shut down. And people just don't want to risk that. But here in the Netherlands, like I came from one of the country with a totalitarian system to one of the most liberal countries in Europe, where everyone thinks that they have the right to say whatever, and protesting is super common. As soon as people aren't happy with what the government does in terms of climate change, in terms of just any law that is passed, in terms of LGBTQ rights, they just go out to the streets and they say, like, they speak their mind, they express themselves. And I think that's quite powerful. Like, we went to the Ukraine protest in Groningen, and I thought that was really cool. It was the first protest in my life, actually. And there was just a bunch of people there on the square, and we were all chanting and saying things in Ukrainian. And you even did a speech, and I thought that was really cool because it was a great speech. So it was overall just a great experience.
Do you reckon that like this lack of protesting in China is then purely a political thing because it's suppressed, or like also a cultural thing that it's, I don't know, maybe considered impolite, or it's just not like, because I often talk about like protesting culture, right? Some cultures are like used to that. Is that just because it's suppressed? Do you reckon people would protest if they were allowed to in China?
I think the two are intertwined because, well, the CCP has been in power for 100 years. Like the, well, maybe 101 now, I'm not sure, but I know the 100-year anniversary was when I was there, and it was quite the event. So it's sort of already been ingrained through a few generations, and that's something that's passed on, and therefore it, I think, started from a very political, controlling approach, and then went into a cultural factor that people just don't see that as a means of expression. Because, like I said, if you can't even, you know, we have Twitter. Sorry, I messed up the mic. We have Twitter in the Western world, and everyone's going crazy on there. You know, you have like Donald Trump just saying the most controversial, random stuff there. And I feel like it's just complete different ends of the spectrum. You, like, you here in the Western world, you can say anything. And then that leads to like cancel culture and to people like Donald Trump who have a platform just saying really stupid things. And then on the other hand, in China, you have this platform called Weibo, I think, which is like Chinese Twitter. And as soon as you say something which isn't aligned with the CCP's views, it gets taken off the internet very quickly. So if you can't even speak your mind on the internet, why would you expose yourself and go out on the street?
Yeah, it makes sense.
So it seems like it started out politically, but because it's been in place for so long, it also just gravitated also towards the culture. Because if you were born into this environment and you were raised in this environment, then naturally you're raised in a way that you're not supposed to express your opinions that much, or at least not the controversial opinions. But, well, my experience with protesting here in the Netherlands was that the protesting here happens more often than in Slovakia, because, well, in Slovakia we have protests when there are some big things, like there are some climate protests. Also, a couple of years ago, a journalist was killed in Slovakia, and that was like a huge outcry public. That was the biggest protest since the Velvet Revolution. But here I saw, like, we went to Groningen for a housing protest and things like these, which I don't think people would protest about in Slovakia. So that was interesting to see. And it was pleasant to see that the civic society is quite active here. But maybe there's also a downside to it, because when there were the corona measures this spring or winter, there were some people were just going mad in the streets, like protesting very violently.
Riots.
I don't think that much here in Leeuwarden, even though there were some, but in some cities, I don't know, was it Rotterdam? Yeah, like shops were being just broken, cars were burning, some pictures of severed fingers or really bad injuries, and that's when things get out of hand. So they are expressing their opinion, which is amazing, but I think that you should express your opinion peacefully.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I also saw on the, like, the year that my last year of high school, when I was planning to come study here, I remember my cousins sent me a series of videos of people protesting in Amsterdam, and there were like horses, like police horses, just galloping through the streets. There was like I saw a bridge getting blown up by like a handmade sort of like artisanal or I don't know what I was trying to say there, but a handmade bomb. And I saw like a woman, for example, just getting kicked down, and like a guy getting like blasted with these high pressure hoses. So there was like a lot of conflict between the people who were not protesting peacefully, and then the police, which obviously had to come in and enforce the rule of law, but unfortunately in like quite a physical way, which is not the best. But you said something about the Velvet Revolution. Mm-hmm. What is that?
So in 1989, when the Soviet Union was starting to fall apart because of a lot of years of just bad management and economic problems, it started out in Poland, which liberated the first, like, from the Soviet countries, and then eventually Czechoslovakia joined in as well, and it started the protests in Prague and then also in Bratislava. And then on the 17th November of 1989, we got liberated, or we just separated ourselves from the Soviets. And that's referred to as the Velvet Revolution, exactly because it was a very peaceful revolution. Like, no one died. There was not a huge police repressal. There was just a lot of people, tens of thousands of people, or even hundreds of thousands of people protesting, but protesting peacefully, having talks, jiggling their keys. That was like the sign of the revolution, and it worked.
Interesting. Yeah, we had a similar revolution in Portugal. We had a dictatorship going on for about 50 years. There was this guy called Salazar. And then on the 25th of April, so quite recently, I also found out from Luca on the 25th of April that the revolution in Italy and Portugal, where dictatorship fell in both countries, happened exactly on the same day.
Well, I mean, the 25th of April in Italy, it's more liberation from the Second World War. So rather the fact that fascism got kicked out definitely. And a few days later, Italians also killed Mussolini trying to escape from the country. But it's not like us liberating from a dictatorship, it's more from the invasion and the ideology, you know. It's a symbolic date that testifies the fact that the ideology of fascism was kicked out. And we got like 1 year later, we voted like if we wanted to be a monarchy or a republic, and we voted for the republic, and we're still right now a republic.
All right. Then slight mistake, but it's still a coincidence that it was on the same day. And it basically, Portugal, like, there was a revolution which happened in one day and there were no lives lost. It was just the military marching through the streets of the main cities with tanks and stuff, and the people were joining in. And then the sign of the revolution was like a red, I'm not sure exactly what it is, if it's like a poppy or a rose, but it's a red flower. Mm-hmm. And the soldiers were putting it on their guns, like on their rifles, and like the women, they were like distributing it to people, and everyone had it as a sign of like peace, because they marched through and they sort of overwhelmed the PID, which was like the sort of dictatorship police, and like the forces which were defending the dictator Salazar, but they completely overwhelmed them, and like there was no fighting that even went on, which was really nice.
I think the name of the flower is carnation. I'm pretty sure. Like, I checked the image, and that's the one, right?
I'm not sure. Wait, I can search up the Portuguese name.
Because I did a research on it while I was in middle school, bro.
Really?
Yeah, because my teacher was pissed with me, and she asked me to do. Yeah, that's the same one. It's just that in the image was.
I'm actually wondering, just Luca, because you were talking about how you are celebrating it as Liberation Day in Italy, mm-hmm. right? For the Second World War.
Yeah.
And that was one of the, because we were talking about culture shocks. And I mean, we've just got now, like on the 4th of May here, coming up the Liberation Day of the Netherlands, right?
Is it the 5th of May?
The 5th of May, not the 4th. And that it, well, I've heard that it'll be celebrated quite extensively, maybe even more than King's Day was. And is that like a thing in Italy, that it's like heavily celebrated in the sense of, for example, festivals and going out? Because I was quite, well, I guess it sort of makes sense coming from Germany. But for us, Liberation Day, so the end of the war, is not really celebrated. It's quite a solemn affair. Like, you've got flowers being put down mm-hmm. at like some sort of statues, and it's a lot of, you know, remembrance more than celebration, even though, of course, it is a good thing. And then I was wondering, because Italy was part of the Axis, as was Germany, is that like similarly, or is it also like celebrated as liberation literally instead of like...
No, it's more, as you said, it's more like a serious affair. I would say like celebration, like going in sites where you remind that's more the thing, you know, or maybe just spending some time at home. Like, I don't recall celebrating on that day. Maybe it's just a national holiday. the 25th of April is often like a beautiful day, you know, you can do a little barbecue at home. That's what I used to do, but it wasn't like a celebration. So, like, I don't know, drinking or whatever, going out is rather like spending some time with your family and just like having more thoughts about what happened, you know. It's just like a recall. Sometimes you need to be reminded of what happened and to know, and that's what we're kind of doing. But a thing that I really see, it's a lot of time, like the 25th of April, people go around and ask, oh, do you know why we are home? And there is a lot of like people don't know what they are celebrating. So it's kind of a dangerous thing, because if you don't remind what happened, it can cause problems. And so it's not a celebration. It's more a serious manner, I would say.
Okay. But it's also, I'm sorry to dwell on this for so long. But then it is officially like coined Liberation Day, because I know there was like this huge in our schools, because it was always also taught as, okay, no, it's not Capitulation Day for us, but it is Liberation Day, like the 8th of May for us it is.
Well, it is called Liberation Day, but I think it's a really conventional date, because few big cities were liberated that day, but until like the 1st, 2nd of May, there were still bombs going on in some places in Italy, because Germany was retreating. So they were bombing like bridges in order to escape. But so it's just a conventional date. But yeah, it's called Liberation Day.
Yeah. Okay, very interesting segue here, but let's tone it down now to like more of a chill tone. I think what you said though about the festivals, I think that says a lot about Dutch culture. Dutch people fucking love to party.
Yeah,
clearly.
Yeah, I would say, and they love beer.
If only they could dance,
which I don't understand.
Yeah, unfortunately they can't, but they do love to chug beers. Like they just love to, you know, drink and get absolutely smashed, and that's okay because we're all students, right? That's part of what we came here to do.
Exactly. We are very ready to embrace the Dutch culture in this sense.
But unfortunately, Tim doesn't like beer.
No, I just... Yeah, as you said, they like to drink a lot of beer, but I just don't understand it for two reasons. And one is because I just don't like beer in general. I don't really like the taste, even though Slovakia is very... very hard on beer, like a lot of Slovaks like it, and also the Czech Republic, they have some of the best beer in the world. And even though when we went to Brussels with Finn last week, we tried out some Belgian beer, I liked that. It was very surprising for me to like beer, actually. But other than that, I don't really like beer, so that's one reason. And the second reason is that I don't think the beer here is very good. I'm sorry to all the Dutch speakers of our podcast, but I really don't think it's good comparing it to Slovak, Czech or Belgian beer.
Add German to that.
And so I just don't understand why they drink it so much, because when you want to get drunk, as usually is our objective during parties, I think it's much better to just drink hard spirits, because they taste horribly, but you don't want alcohol to taste good, because if it tastes good, you drink a lot and you can, you know, become an alcoholic if you like the taste. So, and just drink hard spirits, don't like the taste, but I don't want to like the taste. And it's also quite a culture in Slovakia, like a lot of people in villages, they make their own alcohol from fruits, from plums or apricots, and then they have like liters and liters of them stacked in their house. And then when they go for a visit, they just bring it as a little gift. And it's like, it's nice because it's something they made themselves. Like they put effort and time and energy into it. And then they give it to you and then you drink it and you have fun and you talk, you know, it's just a good time. So I don't really understand the beer culture, but yeah, it's nice for flunky ball.
Yeah, the beer culture is also something, beer and wine, something that we have in Southern Europe. And I think that leads a lot of dads to have beer bellies. So could be a good tip for all the dads listening to the podcast. I have no idea how many there are.
Hopefully not yet. Seeing how we aim to teach.
Switch to vodka, switch to harder spirits, and maybe you'll start dieting, right? It's a good way. Just do some exercise, drink some vodka.
Yeah,
it's not that hard.
Drink some vodka, then go out, dance, party, because you burn alcohol by dancing, burn the energy, and it's all safe. And so now when every time I go home for a break, I make sure to have some time at the airport to buy Slovak alcohol and then bring it here so that I can share a part of my culture. And also Slovak alcohol is cheaper than the alcohol here. And just recently a classmate of mine, we went to this trip, a race, and I of course brought some of my Slovak alcohol, and she was like, how the hell do you always have Slovak alcohol with me? Well, you know, it's just you have to.
But interesting how you bought it at the airport. Is it cheaper at the airport? Because you pay no tax?
Yeah, it's quite cheap. It's quite cheap, like 7 or 8 euros per 0.7 liter bottle of alcohol, which is 37%, so quite strong.
Okay, that's very reasonable. Luca, why don't you tell us a little bit about how people here absolutely destroy Italian culture when they cook?
Well, guys, this is like a tough topic, as you can imagine. And, well, I don't know. I just think the whole idea of food that we have in Italy, it's really different from the one the Dutchies have. Because I believe that in Italy, even like in a weekday, there is like the culture of spending some time and enjoying you cooking and then enjoying your food. While Dutchies are more like into the vibe of the day, they're speeding up a little more, so they didn't have the culture of like stopping for lunch, for example. They're just eating maybe a really simple sandwich, and there's no the culture of like eating and spending time in doing so, putting some passion, some effort in it. And I don't know, personally I think it's like cooking to someone, for me, is like the sweetest way to show love and to show friendness, whatever. Like, if you're my friend, if you are a person that I really care about, cooking for you is like the biggest expression I can give you to say that. And I didn't recall this in Dutch culture. Maybe I'm missing out, but that's what I saw. So, and towards like the destroying, it's just like, since I came here, I heard like recipes of, for example, tiramisu with tofu, or carbonara with cream and peas inside. So that these are like the words that really like killed me and provoked me a lot of pain. But since I'm here, like, I'm noticing that people are respecting a lot my culture, you know, respecting like my ideas and the understanding, oh yeah, this got wrong, this, I can do better this, or I will listen to you, or whenever like they're eating something that is outside the box and they know I would get crazy about it, they're saying, oh, while I was doing so, I was thinking about you. So they have like this sort of guiltness inside, which I really like, you know. I'm creating like this guiltness problem in Canalstrat, and I think it's beautiful. And the last thing that really like killed me was like the tacos with inside the spaghetti. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say anything because I know the people that eat that, and I don't want to express myself on the topic too much. But of course, I didn't really like it. And I hope in the future, by listening to this podcast, I want to be a bit intimidating, I would say. Please don't do it, because I won't feel well towards it. And, but it's not just about, my idea is not just about destroying food or making things wrong, but my idea is like, whenever you're cooking something, do it with passion, because eating is not just the fact of giving to yourself nutrients, but it's also like the fact of giving you some sort of satisfaction. Whenever I cook for myself and it's good, it gives you satisfaction and it tells, oh, I'm good at doing it, at doing this. And it's like, whenever you're doing like a math exercise and you see that you're doing well, it gives you the same level of happiness and satisfaction, and you see you're good at doing something. And of course, you can flex with your friends, invite them over, see, oh, I'm good at cooking, doing a little competition, and have a bit of pride, you know. It's also like a sort of pride. But yeah, as I said before, the fact of bringing here like sort of my idea of how I cook that got transmitted to me by my grandma and by my mom, it's really like a big achievement, and I really like that a lot of people are sort of not following me, but listening to what I have to say and really understanding me. And it's a thing that I really appreciated since I'm here. So I got like these cultural shocks when I came, and I had troubles in understanding what the concept that people had. But once I got installed and people understood me, we got really well with that.
Well, that's great, Luca. As soon as I heard competition, something very good popped into my mind. I just want to remind everyone now that we have a platform that Lee and I did a cooking competition a few weeks ago, and I absolutely wrecked her, even though I burnt my mac and cheese. I think that speaks more to her cooking rather than mine, the fact that I burnt food and I still won by, I think, 1 or 2 points. According to Lisa, who's a very good judge because she's a decent cook, and Luca is also a very good cook. So if anyone wants some recipes or cooking advice, I can thoroughly recommend Luca. He's cooked for me several times and for these boys as well, and he's done a good job every single time, right?
Unspeakably well.
But guys, if you need for advice, the vegan cookbook is out, so check it out as well.
That's shout out true. To well, the Green Office.
Well plugged. Very well plugged.
Okay. I mean, it's actually kind of interesting because I know, speaking about like different eating cultures, and you now said, for example, Luca, in Italy, you really take the time then to cook together, to eat together. It's sort of like a social event, it sounds like. How is it, for example, in Slovakia, but also in Portugal? Because what I'm, well, not struggling with here, but I've noticed that most people, at Canastrad, like it's common to cook warm dinner together and then eat together now as well, which is absolutely lovely. But then, at home in Germany, for us, it was always we'd eat warm in the middle of the day. So for lunch, we'd eat warm, we'd cook. Eat lunch warm, and then in the evening we just eat bread, which has now sort of become a running gag, right? Even. But and now I have the feeling at lunches I don't really cook anymore, because I know in the evening I'll probably cook with someone else, but then I just sort of, I guess, eat something cold or just snack throughout lunch and to then eat properly at dinner time. Is that something, like, I don't know how it is in Slovakia, do you usually eat like a proper meal in the evening or at lunch? Because that was sort of like a switch I now had to make, which was a bit odd and still feels odd a bit sometimes. I don't know whether that's like the Germans at Canastrad are the only ones struggling with this, because I know I'm not alone.
Yeah, so yeah, we usually have a big warm meal for lunch, and then sometimes for dinner as well, but for dinner it's more customary to have bread with a spread and some veggies with some cheese and ham. Like, that's like the typical dinner. And then lunch is usually a soup and then a main meal, so a really big meal to fill you up during the day. And I also didn't really think of it as a social event throughout my life, because, well, first I had lunches in school, and there it was okay, like we sat together and talked, but I more of thought about it as lunch. And then during weekends, when my mom would cook at home, my brother, he would always immediately take the food and just escape the kitchen, go to the living room, sit down, and he was like, okay, let's watch some Simpsons or TV series. So he just took eating as you said, just taking in the nutrients, and he was like, it's a waste of time if I just eat and not do anything besides it. So he always had to watch a TV series to feel like he's not wasting any time. And my mom was always like, come on, let's just sit down and just eat together and just talk a little bit. So I more of thought of it as just getting in the nutrients, and it's like a waste of time. I just need to get it in me, and then I can do some other things. And then at high school, we're eating together, so that like made it a bit better, more social. And now here at uni at Canalstrad, I think my eating is the most social it has ever been in my life, because it's often accompanied, as you mentioned, Finn, cooking with someone else. During that, you're talking, then you sit down, you cook, you eat the food that you've just cooked together, which is just wonderful, and you talk during that. Or it's even a whole evening, as we, exactly all the boys that we are here, have our little football nights where we first cook with in Luca's room and then we watch football, and it's just wonderful. It's a whole social event. So I'm only now really starting to appreciate the fact of eating together and cooking together. And it's also because this is the first time in my life that I'm properly cooking for myself, and it's not just food being provided to me by someone else.
Yeah, if I did what your brother did in my household, I would probably get beat up.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Like, I don't know my family, but in general, Italian families consider like dinner, especially just because everyone is home. You know, my mom used to come home late, so we didn't spend any time together during the day, and dinner was the only time while you could do so. So like rules, like at my place, still at now, like if you show up at the table with your phone, kicked out. If the TV is on, kicked out. Like you need to be there and try to have a chat. Then if you want to be silent because you have your own things, you can, but you're very welcome to have a chat and discuss a bit what happened during the day, or maybe like share your struggles. That's the time where we get the most like into us, because that's the only time where we can share, you know. After dinner, my mom, she goes most of the time directly to sleep, and because she's tired, so that's the only time where you can share it. And I have good memories of like dinners and with my family, because yeah, that was it. Like, that was the moment where I could stay with my family the most.
Mm-hmm. Quick side note, your mom goes to sleep directly after dinner.
Most of the time she goes to bed, and yeah.
Isn't that unhealthy? Aren't you supposed to digest?
I mean, bro, she's about to die. She works 12 hours a day. She works 12 hours a day. She comes home, she eats dinner, then I don't know. She just like gets into bed watching some TV and then she falls asleep.
Okay, because I have a very traumatic experience from when I was younger. I think I've already told you this story, Tim, that my aunt, she told me about this man that she knew somehow who used to work quite late, like Luca's mom. And one time he got home really late and he ordered a pizza. He ate the pizza, went directly to bed afterwards, and then he just died because he didn't digest. Now, I don't know if that was true or if my aunt just wanted to scare me, but since then, I've always digested before I went to bed for at least 2 hours.
I think that's a classic scaring the child fairy tale. Because man, I've been drunk eating a pizza and then falling asleep, and I've survived so far.
That's happened to me as well. Like lately,
I think we're fine.
Thank you. I don't know how it took me that long to realize that. But lately, I've also have sort of fallen into that habit of drunk eating. Like, you get home from the club or something, and you're like, holy shit, what do I have in my fridge?
Yeah.
Let's cook something. Or, well, usually it's not cook. Let's make a tosti. Let's make a sandwich. Like, let's just snack on something.
And that's good. That helps you with your drunkenness. Like, it's one of the basic rules of proper drinking. You should eat well before and then also after, before you go to sleep, so it absorbs the alcohol and it helps you with the next morning. So it's good that you do it.
Okay.
Or in the Netherlands, where alcohol is so expensive, maybe don't eat beforehand, so you need less beer to actually get drunk.
Yeah, I heard from someone recently that whenever they want to go out, they purposely don't have dinner, just so they have to spend less money. And I think that's a great student tip, actually.
Yeah, it is. But I feel that
pay with your health.
Whenever I'm not eating, bro, if you drink without eating,
I think the...
Like, it hits me much, like, it hits me very, very badly.
Absolutely same. What was it on Thursday? That was it Thursday or Wednesday? King's Night.
No, Tuesday. It was Tuesday. Tuesday we ate a shit ton, and I think it worked out anywhere.
We drank a shit ton.
Yeah, I still kept the bottles, by the way. They're still there.
They're the trophies.
The trophies.
Exactly, the trophies. But I think the two vegan burgers were what sort of cushioned the alcohol.
Yeah.
Because the shots, they were many. And I think if we didn't have the burgers there, we would have struggled to get through the evening.
I think we can explain or based on what we were drinking, because I think it's quite funny. So we were about to watch a Champions League match, Manchester City versus Real Madrid. And after that, we were supposed to go clubbing because it was King's Night. So we decided to play a drinking game during the match to get ready for the club. And before the game, we were like, okay, so one shot per goal because, well, goals don't happen that often.
Two shots.
Oh, sorry. Two shots for goal. And then... And then because Karim Benzema is in absolute amazing form, we're like, ah, okay, so maybe three shots per Karim Benzema goal, ha ha ha, it will be fun. And then we proceed to watch the game, and it ends 4-3 with two goals from Karim Benzema. And then we also had one shot just as a welcoming one. So all in all, it was around 17 shots.
And we had the time to do a Moscow Mule, I would recall. Well, like we did the Moscow Mule. Oh, you did two Moscow Mules?
Tim and I had a challenge that night. We were going to drink the same because he thinks that I can't, he thought that I couldn't handle alcohol. But by the end of the night, tell me, what conclusion did you reach?
I was proved wrong. I admit publicly.
I'm considered a Slav now, am I not?
No, you'll have to... No. It's not only about one night of drinking. It has to be more consistent.
Okay. It's endurance.
You're on the right track.
I'm on the right track. I have to keep proving it to you. It's a very esteemed title that I'm seeking to get. But that perfectly how we have arrived here, because now I want to talk about Tim's habit of getting kicked out of clubs or festivals. So Tim, what happened that night? Why did you get kicked out of the club?
Which night? Yeah, so I think that's another cultural difference here in the Netherlands, that on events and parties and festivals and whatnot, I think the security people or just the organizers are quite strict about the rules. I think more strict than in Slovakia. There it's more lenient. The people are just there and they understand you want to have fun. But so this night of the club, that was the King's Night after we watched the game, and we went clubbing, and it was a lot of fun. The songs were super nice. It was super crowded because it was King's Night, so everyone was always pushing you around because they were trying to get somewhere. But I mean, we're used to that here in the clubs. But after, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours of constantly being pushed around, there was also this guy going past me, and he had a t-shirt in his hand, a Dutch t-shirt. He was waving it around very clumsily, and he hit me in the face like 3 times. Of course, I bet it was accidentally, but my first reaction after getting hit in the face was just grabbing his t-shirt and pulling it down and telling him to stop doing that. And then him and his friends, of course, also drunk, started shoving me, and they were starting to be a bit aggressive. And then I just, you know, pushed their hands away. And then a bouncer came and he sent them away. He told me that he would handle it. I didn't really believe him, but I was like, okay, what am I supposed to do? So let's just shake hands with him. And he said he would take care of the situation. And then he left. And then I was dancing for 20 more seconds. And then a different bouncer came and he just tapped me on my shoulder and told me to follow him. So I knew something not good was about to happen. But I just followed him outside. And he told me that the first bouncer told him that I shoved him, which I don't think I did. But I guess it's a matter of opinion, a matter of perspective.
What counts as a shove, really?
Yeah, what counts as a shove? Can you define a shove? I would need the definition for
future lawyer right here.
So I was trying to argument with him, but argumenting with bouncers is always very difficult, and they are not that likely to concede. And so he told me that I can come another time, but that night I'm not welcome anymore. And then after some more talking, I left. Wow. I was like, okay, let's
actually
go.
Funny you say that, because I think at the same night with the same bouncer, I managed to argue my way into the club without ID.
Mm.
So,
wow.
Oh,
I was quite proud. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, because he was asking IDs? Because, guys, I don't recall that I ever given my ID to the guy.
I didn't go in with you,
so I'm not sure if you did. But Finn, tell us, how did you convince the bouncer?
I wish I'd remember. it wasn't Dutch, even. Oh, I feel like my Dutch gets better the more drunk I am.
Yeah,
or probably I just notice my mistakes less.
Yeah.
But
Okay, you're just more
fluid, somehow,
you
know, it somehow worked. Maybe he just wanted to escape my horrid pronunciation of his language and just told me to get in and stop bothering him, but it worked somehow. I don't know.
Well done. I just want to remind you, Tim, that that's not the full story. So Tim, he resorted to argument at first, but since that didn't work, he pulled out his phone and tried to take a selfie with the bouncer. Obviously, the bouncer didn't really enjoy that idea. So he basically grabbed Tim's phone and took it from him. And I was just watching this happen. So as soon as he takes Tim's phone, I don't know why I did this, but I grabbed the phone from the bouncer, who's probably like at least 50 centimeters taller than me and wider as well. And I was just like, I'll take my friend's phone and I'll get him home. Don't worry. And then, yeah, I managed to get my jacket and your phone. And then we went home afterwards.
Yeah. But again, argumentation wise, I think the right was on my side, but he just wouldn't concede. Yeah. Because, well, the guys who were shoving me around, they also took a picture of me, and I didn't like that. And so then after I went out of the club, I came to the bouncer who sent me out, and I was like, okay, I'm going out, but can you make sure that the guys delete the picture? I don't want them to have it. And he was like, yeah, but you know, public space, they can take a picture of anyone. Anyone can take a picture of anyone. It's not illegal. So I was like, okay, so can I take a picture of you? And he was like, yeah. Yes, but I will not like it. And I was like, but you just said everyone can do it. So I pulled out my phone. I wanted to take a selfie with him.
Get this man a lawyer.
And then, yeah, he took my phone. And then Vasco saved my phone.
I think they're not the most reasonable people out there, for sure. But to be fair, they also have to put up with a lot of shit. I've seen several fights break out in front of shooters and Bascule, and then they'd have to step in. Like, I remember one time, we were all standing in the queue, and I just see these two guys start to like talk louder and louder. And then eventually one of the guys, he throws a punch. And as soon as he throws a punch, he sees two security guards, basically two gorillas, running at him. So he throws the punch, instantly takes off sprinting because he knows he's about to get it. And he did not want that smoke.
Did he get away?
He did. What are we going to move on
to? And we can talk about weather and this.
The weather.
Type of stuff.
I think there's nothing good. Actually, I want to say something good about the Netherlands. So what is your favorite? Yeah, you know, we have to show some support to our Dutchies out here. What's your favorite snack, guys? Like the favorite food or your favorite snack?
Do we have to say the snack? Because to be honest, in terms of snack, the Netherlands, But but we can say very just something that we like.
Yeah, okay, something that we like. Sure. Why not? Luca, you can start.
Should I start? Well, of course, guys, I would say experiencing the coffee shop is the best thing. No. But there is a whole reasoning around it. It's not just like the weed, but it's the weed culture that I like. Because, I mean, obviously, I come from a country where, like, if you need to be afraid of smoking, like, a joint at the park close to my house with a view, because I don't even know why, because you're sort of a criminal just because you're smoking a joint there. So if you come from that context and you come here and you have like a place where you can relax, have like a little coffee and smoke there with friends, you just like built up like a different type of relationship with the people that you hang out with in a coffee shop. And for me, if I go there like 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever, it's just like these 2 hours in my day or in my week are just 2 hours where like my problems disappear, my uni work disappear. I'm just like chilling, enjoying the vibe, and just like knowing also other people. Like the other day, I stayed in the coffee shop for a while. I was waiting for a few people and grabbing like the seats, and a guy sat next to me, and I just felt like really like secure and really wanting to talk to him, because in the coffee shop, I believe you share some ideology, so you share some certain vibe with them. So I feel much more secure in talking to a person in the coffee shop rather than in a bus stop or inside a train. And also, like, the vibe that people share there, it's really, like, friendly. Like, a lot of times I ask for papers or whatever, and everyone is super welcoming to you. And also one thing that I noticed is the tone of the conversation that you have inside a coffee shop is much more higher than one that you can get, for example, in a restaurant. Because in a restaurant, you can go with whoever, like your colleagues, your family, anyone. At the coffee shop, I think it's like a really restricted number of people that you would go with. And this makes like the experience completely different. And also like the waitress that you see at the coffee shop, they just have, they respect your vibe and they share some values with you and you know why you are there. While in a restaurant, there is like a multiple reason, range of reasons of why you're going. So yeah, guys, it's just like me forgetting about everything. And that's what I really appreciate of the Netherlands, but also like the level of like, chillingness that I can have whenever I'm outside smoking. I don't have to be bothered about police or anything. And yeah, I remember on 420, a policeman came in front of Canal while we were smoking. We just said hi to him. And it was really understanding that it was 420, you know, we were enjoying ourselves and he really liked it. So no, it's a thing that I really appreciate. The old vibe that also like older people have towards this thing. I feel less stereotypes and more openness. And it's a thing that I appreciate, not because I like to get fucked with weed, but because there is like a whole culture and a cultural value attached to it that I wish like it could change in my country, because it would really fit us in a sense. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think actually this whole thing about people being very open-minded about these sort of things is something you could say in general, because that's what I've noticed. I feel like Dutch people are just very... I'm more kind than the people I'm used to from home. I remember moments where I'd go through the streets. There was this cat. I was just petting the cat. And then people just walk by and sort of make one of nice comments. There was this old lady walking by and just sort of like, oh yeah, this cat always lingers around here for pets and cuddles. Isn't he a rascal, sort of, you know? And people are just sort of nice. So I often sit inside my window at the ground floor. Whenever the sun's shining on it, and then people sometimes just walk by and greet you nicely or say a couple of things. And that's just not something that happened at home, really. Everyone kept more to themselves. And I just really enjoy how open people are here in the Netherlands. So I'd say that's certainly a difference. And then just to add to that, I actually really love the city itself. I love that there's water everywhere. I find it incredibly calming. The canals are awesome. Leeuwarden is an incredibly beautiful city. Might it not be as hip or as studenty as Groningen or something is, but I really, really love the city. I remember the first time I came here and the sun was shining and the trees were green and there were people. It was very lively. And I don't know, like I incredibly enjoy my time here. Yeah.
That's super wholesome from you too. Very well-supported argument from Luca. And nice. Yeah, Finn's unfortunately going to have to leave us now because he has a meeting. Thank you for joining us.
The hustle never stops.
Obviously. Thank you for joining us, Finn.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll see you on the next episode.
I'm sure you will. Take care.
Okay, Tim, what about you? What's something that you like about the Netherlands?
Well, I agree with everything that Finn said, that people are generally very cheerful. They always have a smile on their face. They are quite communicative. They are very open-minded. We can also see it on some of the laws. And there is also a very high level of English, much like general, like even the guy at the market selling you fish, he speaks beautiful, fluent English, which I think is absolutely amazing and, well, helps me a lot because I can't speak almost a word of Dutch and I don't really want to learn it because I don't think the language sounds that nice, so it helps me a lot. But I also appreciate the fact how things just run smoothly, let's say in the governmental or public sphere, or at least from my experiences, because, well, for example, applying for housing allowance, like to get some money for housing from the government, the process through their website is super easy, and like there were no problems with it. Or even when I got some taxes and then I found out that I can apply for exemption so I don't have to pay them, I just sent out a form and they were like, okay, we understand, you don't have to pay. So it was really easy, the communication very smooth. Or I remember very vividly during the first week when I was here, I was quite blown away when I had to go to
to like the city governmental office to get my
Fomente.
Yes, exactly that. Thank you. To get my citizen number because I just moved in. I went there for the first time and there was an employee welcoming me when I walked in through the door, and he was wearing a suit. He just looked super nice and he was very kind. He greeted me, told me to have a nice day. He kindly asked me what I needed. I told him. Then he gave me a form, a pen that I needed to fill out. He pointed me to where I was supposed to go, and I just felt like in a five-star hotel. You know, you just come in and you immediately have this great service offered to you. Like, he, with a smile on his face, he tells you exactly what you need to do. And it was just such a nice and pleasant experience, because usually in, I don't know, in public or governmental office, when you need to get something done, at least from my experience, the people aren't that kind. They're just, you know, sitting there. They probably don't enjoy their job, just with some paperwork. So you come there, it's almost as if you're annoying them by making them do their job, because they have to do something because you came, and they're like grumpy and whatnot. And this was the complete opposite.
That's really nice. Yeah, I think what you said about the language, though, is, you know, it's really great that they can speak English so well. But I think it discourages people from learning Dutch, yeah, because when I went to China, you know, English is not very commonly spoken amongst everyone. Of course, if you go to like an international bar, the waitresses and the bartenders, they're going to speak English. But if you go, for example, to, if you're riding on public transport, if you're taking a taxi, because taxis are super cheap there, so it's very common for people to travel by taxi. If you're taking a taxi, it's super unlikely that the taxi driver is going to speak English. And so you have to learn some Chinese to communicate with him or her and tell them where you want to go. And that was sort of something that clicked for me in my second or third year in China, after I'd had some Chinese classes and I started to learn the language. My experience there was completely different. I started to enjoy my casual chats while I was like riding the taxi and asking the taxi driver where they were from, and they were asking me where I was from. And I remember some of them were always really shocked to see a foreigner. So this one specific experience when the taxi driver pulled out his phone and video called his wife and just pointed the phone at me, and he was like, "Oh my God, this is a foreigner. Look, he looks different from us." And that was a really wholesome experience. I was like talking to his wife and talking to him in Chinese, and I really loved that. But that was like, I think that was my last year actually, so my Chinese was a bit better at the time, even though it's unfortunately getting rusty now. But yeah, like that was a big sort of push for me to learn Chinese, the fact that it's one of the most commonly spoken languages in the world. I think the third now. First is English, second Spanish, and third is Chinese, I think. And the fact that, you know, if you want to live there and have a different, more interconnected and real experience, you have to learn Chinese. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you just sort of live in your international bubble. And whereas for me here, I haven't needed to speak any Dutch. Everyone speaks Dutch. At the supermarket, just random people that you see around at the market, whenever we travel in public transport, you can communicate with anyone in English. Mm-hmm. But lastly, I'll say something positive about the Netherlands. I actually disagree with what Lucas said earlier. I think that Dutch snacks are great, especially when you're drunk. Dutch food is great when you're drunk. Like if you get, for example, a kaasbroodje, I'm probably going to butcher the proper pronunciation, but like a kaasbroodje or I think it was... I tried a croquette. I'm not sure exactly how you say it.
Oh, yeah. Those ones that we got at Paddy O'Ryan.
Yeah. That's a bitterballen. That's amazing.
Yeah,
as well.
Bitterballen are good.
And at Fabo, like coming up, Fabo's right next to Barcelona.
Bro, Fabo, it's so trash. It's like, oh my God.
I thought we were supposed to be positive.
Food from vending machine. Bro.
Yeah, okay. To be honest, the food does come from the vending machine. But when you're drunk, you're not that picky. You know, you just go there, scan your card, You have your croquette right there and you just eat it and it tastes great.
Let me just do a comparison here. When you get out of the club in Italy, you go to the fucking bakery and you get fresh croissant filled with cream. Do you want to compare Fibo with this?
Yeah.
Please.
That happens in Portugal as well. Like if we, you know, after a night out when it's like 5, 6 a.m., the bakeries are just dishing out their first batches of bread, yeah, croissants, and all sorts of nice, what is it called?
Pastries.
Yeah, nice pastries. And you just get it fresh. It's still warm and it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. But I think Fabo is great as well. It's pretty good.
I wish you guys could see Luca's face right now.
Luca is obviously has super high standards in terms of culinary.
No,
because he's a great cook and I'm not as great of a cook, even though I would say I'm a decent cook, as I won the challenge. If anyone wants to come for my name, you're welcome to challenge me. I would love to do another cooking challenge. But yeah, I think that's it for the podcast.
Yeah, I think it was fun in the end. Like, we didn't cover all the points we had, but we just followed the flow of the...
That's why it's an unscripted podcast.
Easy.
The number easy. One in Livorno.
I'm calling you out and I'm challenging you to a cookout.
I'm gonna win. You have no idea what's coming for you.
Oh, we should do a competition like Among Us 4.
No, they can't be Among Us 4. If you're in it, you're gonna win. You can be the judge.
Yeah,
and
I can
Finn,
be the
Tim,
judge,
and I
yeah.
will cook.
Fair.
Can be a vegan... cook-off. And yeah, okay, that's it.
All good.
Closing the episode. We'll see you next week. I mean, not next week, next month. We don't have that much commitment. Next month for another episode of The Common Room.